Broadcasting live from atop the Rocky Mountains, the crossroads of the West. You are listening to the Liberty Roundtable Radio Talk Show.
All right. Happy to have you along, my fellow Americans. Sam Bushman and Kirk Crosby live on your radio. Hard-hitting news the networks refuse to use, no doubt. Always on tap when we take to the airwaves, ladies and gentlemen. This is the broadcast for February the 22nd in the year of our Lord, 2018. This is hour two of two, and our goal, steady as a rock. That is to promote God, family, and country, and to protect life, liberty, and property on your radio in the traditions of our founding fathers. We want to make America great again, and to do that, we've absolutely got to make America moral again, ladies and gentlemen. We heard some thoughts from the Reverend Billy Graham from our buddy Dennis Daly, well-known UPI newscaster last hour. It was incredible. We talked about the NFL player calls for the return to God and respect for life in our society. Who am I talking about? Baltimore Ravens tight end Benjamin Watson. He's advocating for a renewed value in God and life. When you take faith out of the public arena, he says, you take God out of there, people suffer. He criticized taking prayer and God out of schools and moving towards a society that doesn't listen to God, but instead does whatever we want and thinks best. And he advocates a return to God. And we're convinced that that is the answer. If we want to make America great again, we've got to make America moral again. That was last hour. If you want to check it out, it'll be up soon at libertyroundtable.com. Donate, get involved, listen to the archives, spread the broadcasts to your friends. This is Solutions Radio. Speaking of Solutions Radio, our well-known good friend, we've interviewed this guy for what, probably 20 years or more. And he just does a tremendous job for the National Taxpayers Union. He is the president of NTU.org, by the way, and a personal good friend. And man, he's just been doing a tremendous work. In fact, he's now with us live from CPAC. Welcome back, Pete Sepp, the Liberty Roundtable Live, sir.
Great to be here.
All right, so quickly, catch us up on CPAC. What's going on? Who's showing up? It's kind of changed over the years, hasn't it?
It certainly has. It's a much bigger venue now near Washington Harbor. And I'll tell you, Sam, when I showed up at the front entrance of this large hotel complex where we're holding CPAC, the line was going out the door all the way downstairs to the basement. There is a lot of excitement among the crowds and many, many people. Anyone who might think, for example, that, President Trump's ascension to the White House has somehow dampened enthusiasm among conservatives, or that somehow we're retreating in the face of media criticism or criticism from liberal Democrats. It's not happening. I certainly don't see that here.
Well, you can believe the media or your lying eyes, right, Pete?
Yeah.
<That's> I'm just saying, it's goofy. Right. But they just peddle that all day long. And when you go there, you see the truth. That, you know what? There's no doubt some concern about some of the things Donald does. Let's be clear and let's not dismiss that. However, there is incredible support. Donald Trump has 10 times the support than he had on the campaign trail and or even a year ago, right?
Well, I think, yes, a lot of that has to do with results, quite frankly.
Those pesky results.
Yeah, I mean, we were able to get through a reasonably good start for tax reform. I think a very good start, not only in reducing tax burdens on middle-class Americans, but also reducing some of the complexity. Do we have further to go? Sure, but nobody in official Washington was saying that they believed the president and Congress could get together and get the job done on tax reform before the end of 2017, and they did it.
Not only did they do it, but they talked forever about failing on health care. And even though you could say the health care, you know, Barack Hussein / Mitt Romney health care plan is still in place, the fact is that the penalties are going to go away. And so the forced element is gone. And so even though, you know, you could say they didn't get the win we had hoped for on that, let's not dismiss this incredible win of, hey, I don't have penalties and I can go elsewhere for my insurance or not have it at all. I'm 10 times more free on that item alone. And the mainstream press pitched that as a failure over and over and over and over and over. But in the end of the day, in my mind, we still got more to go. But it's a huge win and it can't be denied, Pete.
That's right. And let's not forget that at the beginning of this year, during the debate over a continuing resolution for federal government funding. This was in January. Actually, that bill contained the repeal and delay of several other Obamacare taxes. The health insurance tax has been delayed. That would have been a very serious problem for tens of millions of Americans. Higher premium costs passed through to them. We avoided that. So we're still having successes here for taxpayers, even after the passage of tax reform itself.
So what do you think is going to happen at CPAC? Who's the big kind of focus, folks? Is tax changes going to be on the table for solutions and discussion? Is it just going to be about gun control? What do you think is going to be the highlights and the focus?
Well, definitely an evaluation of how America is going to react in addition to its current reactions to tax reform. I mean, we have, for example, more than 3 million workers who've gotten bonuses of some kind or extra compensation in their retirement plans directly because of tax reform. We've seen $135 billion, with a B, dollars of additional investments committed by companies. And again, they are specifically attributing it to tax reform. This is part of the repatriation of money to the United States that you've talked about a lot on your show, Sam. That's been very important. We're going to see a lot more of that in future quarters. I know it for a fact because corporate tax planners are saying, hey, we're still figuring out some of the details of this tax reform bill. We know we're going to make more investments, give out more bonuses. We're just figuring out how much to do. So there's more good news on the way here.
And by the way, not only are we figuring out what more we can do with what's currently done, but they have an opportunity to do more in this, quote, election year to even make the pot sweeter. Don't they, Pete?
Yeah, they absolutely do. They can further reduce tax rates. They can simplify the system to a greater degree. You know, there's going to be a level of simplification in the 2017 tax reform bill that will help tax filers in the next filing season, not the one that's about to happen, but the one after that. Well, they can still take steps this year to make tax filing simpler. They could, for example, redesign some of the tax forms so that filing in 2018 is less of a chore. So still plenty that can be done here. It's going to take some quick action, but hey, we got that kind of quick action on tax reform. Roughly between September and December of 2017 is when the actual legislative battle happened.
The other thing we can do is, you know, people were wondering about the repatriation money and how big it would be and what an impact it would make and all this kind of stuff. And they created this kind of scenario where it's like, hey, bring it in one time, you get an incredible discount or whatever the case may be. Now that we've seen that companies are willing to bring back this money, I mean, I don't even know. I don't have a list of how many billions of dollars we've decided to bring back already, but it's huge. And I guess what I would kind of do now is say, let's come back then and offer more opportunity there, because it's easy to see this is new money, if you will, money that's been kind of held hostage overseas. It's not going to be negative in the impact in any way. We've already seen the positive impact. But this is new money that can be brought to the table that's been kind of sidelined. And so I would push there, because I don't think that you're going to get a lot of pushback from anybody. It's too hard to debate against, isn't it?
Yeah, it certainly is. And I'll tell you one threat to this whole thing, Sam, is that we have to worry about how other countries, where this cash has been parked for so many years and where these assets of other kinds have been parked, they want to get a bite out of it before it's repatriated to the United States. I mean, that's what's really motivating the European Union and its member companies right now. Their tax administrators are trying to figure out a way to trap that money overseas or at least take a chunk out of it before it comes back here.
But if we take action, lickety split, the money will be gone before they can even get that done. That's the value of just doubling down and getting it done ASAP yesterday.
Yes, that's right. That's definitely one part of it. Another part is our Treasury and the Trump administration are going to have to stand up to those bullying tactics like they haven't in the past. That's another big element of it.
Well, our prayers are with them. We got to get this done. But the reason that I bring that one up is because it's new money. It's not fighting over current money, if you will. And the evidence is clear. The second this one-time thing got announced, there's literally billions of dollars. Big companies are moving back a lot of money already. And I just don't think it's very controversial to say, hey, you know what? It's good. It's great. We want some more of it. I don't think it's too hard to argue against. It's kind of like the idea of taking a lot of the foreign aid money and saying, let's build infrastructure with it. I don't think you're going to get a lot of internal pushback, whereas when you deal with other internal issues that may be much more controversial, you're always going to have somebody that's affected negatively stand up and create opposition. I don't know that there's a whole lot of negatives in these things, and that's why I spend so much time highlighting this solution, because there's a lot of money at stake, and there's not a lot of opposition that you're going to get, and what is brought up as faux opposition is easily dismissed.
Yeah.
Do you think I'm right on that point?
Yeah. Yeah, I think you are exactly right. And the more we can educate the American people about the importance of this, the fact that this is finally money that's coming back home that can be invested in so many things, including stocks, retirement funds, 401ks. I mean, there are many, many things that can be done with this money that will increase the material wealth of Americans going forward.
Now, Donald Trump put, I think, $200 million in and said, hey, let's see if we can build this infrastructure out. We need, what, $1.5 quote, trillion for it. A lot of it's going to come from the private sector. If you bring back a lot of that money, I bet that'll natively, whatever you want to call it, organically happen. When we get back, I want Pete Sepp's response to that. I don't know that I'm even right on all this stuff, folks. I'm just a one-man think tank. But I'm telling you right now, I'm convinced a lot of that money will just organically happen if it appears, if it's here, if we allow it to appear. Pete Sepp, live at CPAC on your radio, NTU.org.
Every day I wake up, it's almost like a battle. It's like, well, you know, I could do this today. I could go get drunk.
I don't like beer. I'm an alcoholic because I can't, you know, stop drinking because it alters my mind, but I don't like alcohol.
And I had to keep telling myself that, you know, this is okay. Everybody does this. My whole life was just a big lie.
I can't control if I do take that drink because I'm an addict, and I can't.
I admit, it's messed me up.
I don't have a very good memory. I have a hard time remembering things when I learn them.
I can't concentrate on one thing for more than 5 or 10 minutes. You have fun until you hit rock bottom, and it's not fun anymore.
I remember sitting in assemblies about drugs, and I thought, that's never going to happen to me. I'm never going to be like those kids. Here I am.
The choices that you make are choices you're going to have to live with.
A public service message from The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
The word vigor is defined in the dictionary as health and strength in body and mind. Do you have enough health and strength in body and mind? Would you like to pursue life with passion? Would you like to know where you stand when it comes to your vigor score? That's right. There's a free scientific test you could take now that'll help you find out what your vigor score is. Then you can do things to improve that score. Did you know that? It's absolutely free, F-R-E-E free. All you got to do is get a hold of Kurt Crosby. You can do so, C-U-R-T. That's Kurt, C-U-R-T, at libertyroundtable.com. Or call Kurt at 801-669-2211. That's 801-669-2211. Would you like to learn about the scientifically proven vigor test? It's free. How would you like to improve your vigor score? Again, inexpensive solutions are available now. Call Kurt Crosby at 801-669-2211 or Kurt, C-U-R-T, at libertyroundtable.com for your free vigor score test today.
With news the networks refuse to use, you are listening to the Liberty Roundtable Radio Talk Show.
Pete Sepp riding shotgun on Liberty Roundtable Live today, NTU.org. That's the National Taxpayers Union, NTU.org. Pete's reporting live from CPAC right now, folks. We're talking about taxes. We're talking about repatriating funds from overseas. And, you know, Donald Trump announced this initiative to rebuild America or to work on the infrastructure plan. He put, what, I think $200 million in. Or $200 billion, I'm sorry. And then he said, we got to have $1.5 trillion. And everybody kind of laughed and mocked and said, well, where are you going to get the cash from, Donald? Well, hey, man, you guys interview me on TV. I'll tell you where he's going to get the money. We're going to repatriate it. Thank you very much. And natively, organically, I'm convinced the money will appear to do incredible things. Am I crazy, Pete?
No, not at all. In fact, there are financial journalists. I forget the outlet that I read this in just barely a week and a half ago. It might have been Bloomberg or one of the other financial news media services. They said exactly that. The House and Senate tax cut plan that the president signed into law last year is delivering unexpected dividends that just might translate into a lot of that extra investment into infrastructure.
Just imagine if we did it again, bigger and badder and more, though, because there's still a lot of money.
Yes. I mean, we're talking about several trillion dollars estimated that's locked in overseas that's now being unlocked. I mean, we're talking about a part of this new law that's called deemed repatriation. If companies want to participate in the lower 21% corporate tax rate, they have to bring the money back from overseas,
and what if,
where it's taxed at a rate that's a little lower than that.
And what if you added another idea that said, hey, not only the one time can you bring back whatever you do, but now we're going to give you another opportunity. We're going to let you bring back money. And if you invested in the infrastructure, by the way, there's going to be zero tax.
That's an easy thing to do. Sure. I mean,
why not? Because otherwise you're going to pay for it in the infrastructure. You're going to collect taxes from companies, and then you're going to invest in the infrastructure. In other words, why take the money? Just say, hey, if you invest, there's no tax on this at all. We all gain, and we don't need taxed money, right? And
You could very easily say with the repatriated cash, if you as a business float that as a bond or use it to finance an infrastructure project, zero tax rate on it. And suddenly you have an even bigger pool of cash to do this.
Now, how come they can't figure this out up in Washington? I'm like a one man think tank with like a 50 IQ, Pete. What's going on around here?
I think your IQ is higher than that, but we digress. But the real reason is I think many politicians know these things would work. They just don't necessarily have the political will to try them out. And that's bothersome because we've just demonstrated that it's politically feasible to provide tax relief and simplification. We're demonstrating now that we can make infrastructure improvements without spending a lot of federal money the same old way through pork barrel projects. We can demonstrate further with ideas like yours that the financing can be there too. It's sort of like pushing spaghetti on a plate. You've got to get these people to realize that their own inertia is really what's standing in the way of change, not really much else.
All right, I got a bad news piece and a good news piece in taxes that I want to bounce off you because I want to know how viable or serious they really are, et cetera, et cetera. All right. The first one, Trump signals that he's open to a mileage tax with praise of an Oregon program, writes Reuters. In other words, hey, instead of increasing gas tax, which he said he was interested in talking about, now they're talking about a mileage tax. I'm concerned about this. Is this a national real discussion, or is this just a couple of people talking out of turn?
Well, there are pilot programs in several states. Oregon's one of them. Missouri is another, where the federal government has given states permission, which is a problem in and of itself, to experiment with what are called vehicle miles travel taxes. Instead of paying a federal gasoline tax, you would pay a tax based on how far you drive on the road and maybe how many axles your car has or what weight it is. Now, the concept really isn't a bad one. We've got to make sure, though, that if we institute something like this, it's in place of the current gas tax rather than on top of the current gas tax.
My other concern, though, is the invasion into our privacy about, you know what, the government's now going to know how many miles I drive, where I drive, how heavy my car is, what I'm driving, we go on. Is the compliance going to be a big problem? Is the privacy a big problem with this idea?
It could be, and designing a system that still respects drivers' privacy would be a challenge. Now, of course, a lot of people in the Northeast corridor of the United States especially already deal with this through the EasyPass system. I think some drivers in California know it pretty well, too. It's a little thing you stick on your rearview mirror of your car, and when you go through various checkpoints, it deducts a certain amount of money. based on how far you go. A lot of people have learned to live with that. Whether we want to implement this concept widely, no, we have to ask some questions about privacy, of course.
We also need to think about what's a better way to do it. And I personally believe a little bit of increased tariffs would be a great idea. It's constitutional. It doesn't invade our privacy. You might feel a little bit of a pinch at the cash register when you buy and sell things, but it wouldn't at all affect the income side of things. It's the expenditure side of things, which is always good. And it doesn't violate any of our privacy at all. I would go towards something like that personally.
Yeah, that's one solution as well. You could decide to finance much of the infrastructure, say, through border types of taxes or tariffs.
And, you know, if you do it on such a broad thing like trade across borders, which is massive money, I mean, it would literally need to be pennies at most to make a huge financial war chest for this goal of infrastructure. And I get, and I'm not anti-government, I get there's a proper need for making sure the infrastructure in America is strong from defense on down. There's value in that. And we need to not get tripped up in thinking just because they want too much taxes that it's wrongheaded to care about the infrastructure. There's a balance there that needs to be appropriately discussed.
Well, yes. And we also need to appropriately discuss how much government involvement is necessary in our infrastructure. I mean, lots of countries around the world, just to give one example, have decided we're going to have a dual system for air traffic control. We're going to have a consortium of users of the system, airlines, cargo haulers, everybody who are going to pay into a user-funded system that's accountable to them to run the operation of air traffic control while government regulates the safety. That kind of system works really well around the world. We ought to be considering it. In fact, it's a good legislative proposal, ready to go, but there are still a few folks who think that government should run the whole thing.
Well, I know this. The more local we can take it, the more private we can take it, oftentimes we have more accountability and transparency in funding and proper use and open discussion and debate in a transparent scenario. That's my experience, Pete. What do you say?
Oh, absolutely so. I mean, just again, taking this air traffic control concept, imagine if instead of the FAA saying, well, tough luck if you don't like delays in the air traffic control system. We run it. We control most of the towers. We're going to do it the way we want to. Imagine flipping that on its head and the users of the system saying, hey, we're paying for this now. We're going to demand better service, fewer delays, and better routing of air traffic, even though government will still have a role to play in regulating the safety. I think doing that in so many applications for infrastructure will get us better service at a lower price.
It also ties it to reality. In other words, instead of me just complaining about the roads, I'm going to come back and say, well, hey, if I'm a contributor to this fund on the roads and I have a problem with the roads, and when they say, well, we need more money to make sure the roads are happening, I'm going to push for more transparency, more accountability in terms of how the funds are spent, or I'm going to be on board saying I agree we need more money for it. It creates this tie between transparency and accountability that we haven't seen to date, and I think that's part of the problem. We've simply said, oh, well, the roads are bad, but I can't do anything about it, and I just sit and complain and wring my hands. This kind of completes the circle for accountability and transparency in the process too, right?
Yeah, it absolutely is. I mean, when you think of the way roads are funded now, they collect gas taxes at the federal level, and of course, state and local have some too, but at the federal level, the gas taxes go into a big federal pot called the Highway Trust Fund, and every few years, through a congressional process, the lawmakers fight over how much each state will get, what types of projects will get funded, and they love it that way.
What if we just rejected all that and let the states deal with it, and people would gravitate towards the states that have the best infrastructure?
Yeah, exactly.
Ooh, imagine a competing competition reality like that. Pete Sepp with us, ladies and gentlemen. When we get back, I want to talk about something Utah did. It's incredible. It's good news. We hope it goes all the way and what it would mean across the country. Pete Sepp, NTU.org from CPAC.
Protecting your liberties. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
a parent, is receiving a faith-based, character-focused education for your children difficult to find? Do you believe that godly principles should be a central component in your child's education? Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center, where heritage and responsibility instill character. For over 40 years, American Heritage School has been educating both hearts and minds, bringing out academic excellence. This is the school where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental, where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. With American Heritage School's Advanced Distance Education Program, distance is no longer an issue. With an accredited LDS-oriented curriculum from kindergarten through 12th grade, your children can attend from anywhere in the world. American Heritage School will prepare your child for more than a job. It will prepare them for life. To learn more, visit American-Heritage.org. That's American-Heritage.org.
Liberty is not free. Its costs are innumerable. Without monetary funding, the valiant efforts of freedom-loving Americans become diminished or outright defeated. We present a solution, the Give Me Liberty Fund. The plan is quite simple. Invite individual Americans to contribute less than a dollar a day. These monetary funds are used to promote liberty-minded media, organizations, events, candidates, movements, and speakers. In the spirit of transparency, all expenditures are published. Patriotic business owners provide discounted products and services to Give Me Liberty Fund members. Our greatest strength is in numbers. Go to GiveMeLibertyFund.com and become part of the solution today. GiveMeLibertyFund.com. Participate in the peaceful restoration of the greatest and freest country in the world.
Ladies and gentlemen, what is the KQ? You know, the kosher question. Most Americans purchase their groceries while having no idea that almost every essential food product on the shelves is certified kosher by one of over 1,000 rabbinical agencies across the country. Indeed, the kosher question encompasses not only food and religion, but also affects our economics and politics. In an effort to promote awareness to this kosher question, developers have recently published an app for your smartphone that will not only educate users on this little-known phenomenon, but also features a database of food products that have not been kosher certified. The Koshertified app has prominent advertisement on TPC's homepage, or you can check out its website at koshertified.com. Wouldn't it be prudent to start eating in favor of your own interests? The Koshertified app will be your start. Download it now at koshertified.com. That's KOSCHERTIFIED.com.
Promoting God, family, and country. You are listening to Liberty Roundtable Radio.
All right, back with you live. We're talking to Pete Sepp, NTU.org. Ladies and gentlemen, doing a great job. Pete Sepp's reporting live from CPAC. We're talking about taxes. We're talking about our lives. And we're talking about how we can make it better. This is Solutions Radio, if you haven't noticed. So I ended the last segment talking about, hey, states could compete. And if you didn't have this federal in the mix scenario, doling out funds on a begging basis, if you will, but states could compete and people could gravitate towards the states that are doing the best things. They have the best infrastructure. They have the lowest taxes, the most friendly environments, the least amount of regulations that are not necessary, but yet some regulations that are appropriate for a level playing field and a great environment. There's a balance there, too. Those who say I'm anti-government, they lie. I just want less government. That's all. Anyway, I digress, except to say Utah is doing that very thing, Kurt.
Well, yeah, just before we get to that, I was just going to weigh in real quick on the gas tax thing. You know, at least my, you know, when you compare the gas tax to a tax that would basically tax you based on the weight of your vehicle and whatever, so that then people with, say, electric cars and all that kind of stuff would participate fairly, you know, a whole lot of that needs to be taken care of properly so that we collect it and spend it where it's collected, in my opinion, not spend it where it's like, hey, whoever's got the biggest vote in Congress. But anyway, that's for the that part. I was going to ask Pete, though, real quick before we get to the Utah story. Did you see the CNS News piece a little while back that we found where it says feds collect record taxes in first month under tax cut, run surplus in January? And how many times have we run a surplus in your lifetime?
Not many times. I was born in 1964, so I can actually count on one and a half of my hands how many times we have finished a fiscal year with a budget surplus. I mean, between 1969 and 2000, we had no budget surpluses at the end of the fiscal year. We had a couple of them in 2000, 2001, and we went straight into the deficits. There were a couple more in the early 60s when I was born, but it is a very rare occurrence.
I thought you'd have those numbers, and I appreciate your report on that. Thank you. That, in my opinion, that's something to push or promote or whatever. Imagine having a surplus. Now, on the our local story in our area, the headline reads, Utah House votes to remove sales tax on food. Now, apparently, though, Sam, it's connected to more than just Utah, because they say that Utah would join 40 states that don't tax food if the legislature passes the bill and the governor signs it into law. So it's apparently not just a, you know, local kind of thing.
And let me tell you why I'm so on this plan really quick, Pete, and then get your take. The reason that I'm so for this plan is because, again, what they often do is they say, well, the poorest among us need a government handout to survive, a kind of a baseline of living or whatever you want to call it. I find that deplorable. I don't like it. I reject it. I don't think that's the proper role of government at all. But when you have taxes on food and taxes on gas and all these taxes that people cannot avoid just to survive, then of course they have to have extra money or they can't even exist. But if you take away all the government impediments or blocks or whatever you want to say, instantly you get to where, you know what, most people can make it just fine. And I think this starts that discussion, right?
Yeah, I definitely think so. I mean, there are different ways to do this. If, for example, Utah was considering repeal of its income tax, and in so doing, they were going to broaden the number of items and types of items subject to sales tax, well, that might be a worthwhile discussion. But if we're not going to do that, then we need to focus on keeping states competitive with their tax policies and having them compete not only for dollars, but for people, for talent, for businesses. And this is one way to do it.
You know, another thing to think about, Pete, I was amazed to read in the same story. It says there's no sales tax on prescription drugs. Now, they say that some people take those to preserve their lives. One guy asked, well, don't we need food to preserve our lives?
Yeah, that's certainly the case. And, you know, there is this debate within the fiscal conservative movement over whether there should be, for example, any kind of exemption from federal income tax. We want everybody to pay in to the maintenance and upkeep of the federal government because supposedly that will make us all invested in its future. Well, but there's also the cross current there, the counter argument that, well, doesn't everybody have a right to provide for themselves and survive before they are forced to provide for government? And I think that's a valid argument.
Kurt?
Yeah, I'm just trying to it's amazing to me that there are so many options, so many ideas, so many ways, I guess you could call them solutions. I personally think that typically, like Sam was talking about the states competing, you look at states like, what is it, Florida and Texas, where they have no income tax, state income tax, that is, and you have maybe some of the best economies, if not the best, in America, and you'd have to arguably say that it has a lot to do with less taxes.
Yeah, it certainly does. And of course, Utah has done a pretty good job there. In fact, our colleagues at Tax Foundation have put together what they call a State Business Tax Climate Index, where they evaluate all the types of tax burdens, not only on businesses, but consumers. Utah comes out at number 8 in the most recent ranking. So top 10, alongside a lot of states that have no income tax whatsoever. So, you know, it goes to show you that even if the citizens of a state decide to have an income tax, they can still improve their tax climates to the point where they're very attractive. And, you know, by contrast, some of the states in that region with Utah, like California and New Mexico, boy, they have a long way to go before they get near the top 10.
Wow. You know, one of the things is some governments have kind of started to create, I think it's in California. I'm trying to find the story right now. I had saved it to talk about it in detail, but it's so relevant here right now that I want to bring it up. And what they want to do is they want to give people kind of everybody would get a government baseline check to survive, if you will. Are you familiar with this stuff going on, Pete?
Yeah, I've heard of this. And you know, it's almost like what Alaska does with its so-called permanent fund from receipts from oil and the like.
I can't think of a more wrong-headed idea.
Yeah, that, you know, a government-guaranteed living is really the first step to socialism. I mean, it's the biggest step to socialism when you think about it, because it requires confiscating funds from others or going into huge amounts of debt in order to finance it.
Yeah, they call it universal basic income. And it's basically, you know, something being pushed to say that, hey, that way we'll have nobody sleeping on the streets. Well, whenever you dump more money into whatever it is, then all that happens, especially when it's government money, you're going to have prices go up to offset that new money.
Yeah, exactly. And at least in Alaska, there's no income tax. The receipts are from really modest taxes on petroleum extraction. And it's really sort of a dividend. I mean, this concept is taking it to a whole different and terrible level.
Yeah, and actually, Kurt helped me find the story. Headline says this: Democratic presidential candidate, guy by the name of Andrew Yang, he's going to run promoting this universal basic income idea, Kurt.
Yeah, you're exactly right. He's a Silicon Valley hotshot, and basically, you know, that's his plan. It's nothing new, really, Sam, to run pushing the idea that you're going to take money from one crowd and give it to the others. I mean, as long as you give it to the one that has the most votes, you may win.
Right? Yeah, and it's just the classic, you know what, I'll give you a lollipop if you vote for me. Just kind of expanded to relate to a more encompassing kind of idea. It's socialism, big time, folks. We got to reject that. Maybe we can get Andrew on the radio and discuss this with him. But anyway, hang on tight. Pete Sepp with us live from CPAC NTU. That's National Taxpayers Union, NTU.org.
Attention, Liberty News Radio listeners. Hard-hitting talk radio has never been and never will be supported by the mainstream in America. Hard-hitting talk radio is taking on the mainstream press like never before. News the networks refuse to use is one of the best ways to educate people. We invite all liberty-loving Americans to join with us to restore the principles of our founding fathers and promote God, family, and country in the media and our lives. Please help spread the Liberty message with your generous donation. You can go online at libertynewsradio.com right now and make a donation online. Or call 801-756-9133 and make a donation over the phone. That's libertynewsradio.com and 801-756-9133. Make a donation today.
Scott Bradley here. Most Americans are painfully aware that the nation is on the wrong track and in dire straits. Unfortunately, most political pundits only nibble around the edges when they claim to address the issues. Even worse, many of the so-called solutions are simply rewarmed servings of what got us into the mess we currently face. And the politicians think we're so gullible and naive that we'll buy their lies that they have reformed and now understand where they led us astray. Unfortunately, the truth of the matter is that they simply wish to continue to hold power. The solution to America's challenges is found in returning to the timeless principles found in the United States Constitution. My book and lecture series will reawaken in Americans an understanding and love of the principles which made this nation the freest, most prosperous, happiest, and most respected nation on earth. Visit topreservethenation.com and order my book and lectures to begin the restoration of this great nation.
Begging politicians, bureaucrats, and educrats, and all do-gooders to please obey the supreme law of the land, the Constitution. This is Liberty Roundtable.
So this universal income is becoming a hot topic for a variety of reasons. And Democratic presidential candidate Andrew Yang is running on this very idea of a, quote, universal basic income. UBI, I guess you call it. Anyway, Chelsea Schilling over at WND writes, "The rise of the machines drives push for universal basic income." And this issue kind of relates to disruptive technology. You know, they always want you to believe the end of the world's coming. And when we left the industrial age, if you will, and kind of came into the digital age, they thought that. They thought, you know, radio, AM radio was going to be dead when FM came along. And FM was going to be dead when TV and black and white TV. Anyway, it went on and on. Newspapers are going to be dead and everything's going to be dead. They always pitch this awful scenario, but the reality is quite different. When will we learn, if you will? And nevertheless, Chelsea Schilling talks about the rise of the machines. They're saying, hey, once the machines take over, nobody will have a job, Kurt.
Well, that's what they're saying. But, you know, I would simply point you to this. No, point you to this idea that says, God said, 6 days shalt thou labor. Now, you can find things to do, even if they're telling you there's nothing for you to work on. Don't believe it. There's plenty to work on. Work those 6 days and take the one off and live your life in a good fashion.
And don't believe when these disruptive technologies come that it's the end of the world scenario. Believe that there will be a change. No doubt disruptive technology causes change. I mean, I sit behind a desk all day long. I don't sit out on a tractor, and I certainly don't hand plow. Okay, so there's no doubt changes happen, but I don't see anybody out of work any more today than they were back then. I see a different kind of work for sure. But I believe we ought to move towards the entrepreneurial spirit, and we ought to reject the Amazons, and we ought to have hometowns work together and service each other. And we ought to bring back small business and entrepreneurship in America. And if we could reduce regulation and less taxes, we might actually get that done, Pete.
Yeah, exactly. And when we think about disruptive technology forcing people to find other work or creating job losses, we have to think about some of the liberal socialistic policies that actually hasten that. When you think about minimum wages and those get raised to $15 or $20 an hour, these are some of the same people calling for a guaranteed minimum income, and they say, hooray, look at what we're doing for workers. Well, businesses' response, especially small businesses, hey, my labor cost is fixed relative to my profit. So in order to accommodate this new wage law, I'm simply going to cut back your working hours, or I'm going to hire a machine to do what you were once doing because it's cheaper now. So if we don't...
Or even the more unfortunate idea will be, I don't have the ability to compete. I'm just going to have to shut my doors.
Yeah, that's right. And that creates lost opportunities too. So, you know, when some complain about the rise of machines, we have to look at some of the liberal policies that are making that situation more difficult to cope with.
I think if we're creative, I think if we're of an entrepreneurial spirit, Pete Sepp, I think we can come back to say, you know what? This idea of machines has been tremendous. We now have plenty of food for the world. Now, somebody would say we don't. I would say wicked, corrupt governments prevent that. But there Our food output has increased due to machines incredibly. And I would say that machines can do wonderful things. There's other ways to make money. There's other ways to service one another. There's ways to make a difference. There's ways to build a better mousetrap. There's ways to have a new economy. We got to be creative, and there's nothing in America the genius of Americans can't solve. I'm convinced of that in the free market. But if the free market's not left alone to do its job, then it just stifles innovation, shuts down That's creativity. Right. We got to open that spigot that made America the economic engine of the world, Pete.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, this is what happens when economies are allowed to evolve. Look at all the folks who are doing ride shares, when they have a few extra hours to drive people around, make a little extra money. You know, we talk about the advent of automated cars and trucks and autonomous vehicles. Well, that might be a threat to some of these folks who do ride share, but they'll again find services to provide on a casual hour-by-hour basis that others want. That's the beauty of the marketplace. It keeps evolving. It's not static like government often is.
And the more competition, the lower taxes, the more friendly of an environment with a level playing field, the better. The point is there is a proper role for limited government in the mix. The real challenge is to understand and embrace that proper role, Pete.
Yes, exactly. And to realize that when we talk about trusting the market, it's not some inhuman structure that inexorably moves forward. It's all of us. It's us interacting voluntarily, providing each other services for compensation, figuring out ways we can do things better. It's nothing to fear. It's all of us if we recognize it as such.
Wow. Just use Venezuela for the comparison, Kurt.
Well, yeah, Venezuela looks like if you're looking for a place to trim down and lose a little fat, that's what's happening down in Venezuela.
Head on down to Venezuela, folks. Oh, man.
The headline from worldnetdaily.com.
By the way, let me
Reuters,
just stop you, Kurt. We're not laughing about this. This is not funny.
No. But, you know, what you've got is out of control government, and, you know, you've got the results of it. But down there now, the average individual over the last year or so, I guess, has dropped about 24 pounds. They say, you know, they're instead of eating quite as much, they're eating about, two or less meals a day. So I guess maybe Weight Watchers is not doing as well as they were in Venezuela. But, folks are really getting, I guess you could say, in better shape, huh, Sam?
Yeah, and our prayers are with those folks. And this just kind of proves my point. There's plenty of food on the planet. 9 times out of 10, it's these out-of-control governments that create the very problem. And really quick, just to step back to Uber to make the point. Hey, you have government regulating taxi cabs, and drivers and Ubers and Lyft have had a real challenge coming to fruition against the regulation going on. But the second we get rid of those regulations and there's competitions, instantly there's opportunity. And we need more of that in America and Venezuela, Pete.
Yes. And what we see in Venezuela with people voting with their feet, fleeing to other countries for opportunity, we see to another type of degree what's happening in many of our states. No, people are not starving in places like Illinois or New York or New Jersey, certainly not. But their incomes are going down, their opportunities are being reduced, and they're seeking that income and opportunities in other states. It's the natural movement of humans toward freedom, and that's something to be very faithful about.
Kurt, you want to respond to this?
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. It's one of the great geniuses of America. Not only do you have, you know, lots of different towns and cities, or even, dare I say, you can live out in the country. You can live in different counties, states, and it just like having a different store to go to, you can get different services that way. And, you've got lots of opportunity in that right here in America. Good point.
And the interesting thing is 90% of the people in Venezuela are in poverty right now, ladies and gentlemen. And the question is why? And what can be done
Good point.
Most importantly, what can be done to change that, Pete?
Yeah, it has to be turning away from socialism and embracing opportunity. High tax rates, big government subsidies, heavy regulations, command and control economies simply don't work. And unfortunately, we have to keep learning this lesson. It apparently didn't sink in with the Soviet Union. And so here we are again, learning history.
And it didn't sink in back in the day with Governor Bradford either. At least it didn't get carried forward in a sink-in kind of a way like it should. Final minutes, Pete Sepp, what do you have you want to kind of bring to our attention or make sure we're kind of caught up on and aware of, sir?
Well, while we are making progress on tax reform and IRS reform, by the way, there's going to be a big push on that, and we can talk about that next month. But the spending in Washington, D.C. really has to be brought under control. The last deal that was signed, essentially giving $300 billion more to the federal government, and it was bipartisan, is big trouble. And we have got to head off this impulse among Republicans especially to think, well, we cut taxes so deficits don't matter and we can spend as much money as we want. We've got to break them of that habit, because it's going to be a losing one for the election.
Wow, cut taxes, cut spending. Sounds like a formula for success, sir.
Absolutely it is. It works in a lot of states, many countries.
Well, and, you know, we mentioned Venezuela, Pete. It's a perfect opportunity to use them as an example, even though it's a bad example. It's you got to learn from it. As far as I know, Venezuela, very rich country when it comes to like petroleum and all that kind of stuff, but their government basically privatized. They did exactly opposite of that. They basically they took over the companies that had their operations there, and now, you know, they don't have a private investment there, isn't that correct?
And that's why I say that it's a scenario where we have plenty of food on the planet, plenty of opportunity on the planet. Oftentimes it's governments that get in the way and make this feel like it's not the case. Pete?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look at OPEC, for example, basically a cartel of governments, state-owned enterprises, trying to control the supply of oil for the world. How did we respond? We didn't nationalize our oil industry. We unleashed the free market. We developed techniques like fracking and horizontal drilling. And we have an abundance of petroleum in this country now. That's the way to do it.
In fact, sadly, we even export it.
Yes.
I say sadly because we ought to keep it instead of exporting some and importing others. That's a fiasco in the making. But we can make a difference. All right. Say your question again to Pete and let him answer real quick before we let him fly, Kurt.
Well, you know, when it comes to the whole Venezuela thing, they're a perfect example of what not to do. They had, in my opinion, a pretty wealthy country when it comes to petroleum and all that stuff. And they had foreign investments, companies coming in, you know, running those things. And then the government said, hey, unlike what, I mean, they should have done, they just basically took those things over. They stole them from those companies, and then they basically, you can see the tragic end. They just don't have business, they don't have economy, and they have, well, at least the people are losing weight, though. Mm-hmm.
Maybe they ought to export the Constitution and go ahead back to the free market and watch that country flourish, Pete.
Amen. And always remember, if one person's property isn't safe or one big company's property isn't safe, nobody's property is safe.
Amen to that, sir. Thank you so much. Travel safe at CPAC Live, my brother.
My pleasure. Take care.
Pete Sepp, ladies and gentlemen, president of National Taxpayers Union, NTU.org. Wow. The more perfect union in the United States of America and the National Taxpayers Union, two unions I support. Incredible stuff. Doing a great job as always. Pete's spot on. We got to cut taxes and we got to cut spending. Kurt's right. We got to have government support the free market and get out of the way and have less regulation. Those are the answers, ladies and gentlemen. This is Liberty Roundtable Live. Donate today. LibertyRoundtable.com, LibertyNewsRadio.com. We declare this nation shall endure.